in a way that we do not care for depth, but we go for the surface.
Nice. You know?
We care about the brands of our clothes, but we do not notice what we're wearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I got it. I got your point.
I look at your appearance, but I did not dig down.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's what happened to us.
Yeah.
And it is most of the things that happen to a breathing being in this modern world is that, I don't know, maybe it's out of so much busyness that happens to us that unconsciously we go with the flow.
Yeah.
You know, it happens so unconsciously. We just, all of us are just
being
like
this. We don't even notice that we're just noticing only apparent things. We are not getting a little deeper down.
Exactly.
But the thing is that one must have this, while judging people, I mean, or like if someone is judging me or my clothes, like you rightly mentioned, I must always have this thing in mind. I don't have a community to impress. I have a family to feed.
Yes.
I don't want to impress.
That's very important.
That's a very nice thing you said, really.
Yeah.
Like, why are you brand conscious? Why? Mm-hmm. You want to impress a community?
Why? Recently, we see that many people are so much involved with the brands, with the names.
I think...
Is it the effect of social media?
It is the effect of social media plus the investors. The investors spending in the brands and the advertisement of the brands. And those
advertisements are very
reach
important.
You through social media.
Yes.
The advertisements reach you, basically. But the actual thing is investment. The investment of the investors.
You know, I think nowadays you have your cell phone in your hand and...
you have access to a lot of news,
inevitably, you see things and you are attached to them.
Yeah.
You know, you feel this extra thing that you have to buy this, you have to buy that. But actually, you don't need it. You know?
Exactly.
We're going through unnecessary things.
Because
we feel there is an urge
I think in these, you know, when you have the cell phone in your hand, when you're looking towards the world through your cell phone.
Yes.
It shows you only apparent things. The teeth of an elephant that are shown that are outside are something different, but the teeth to eat are something different.
Yes.
You only see that way, but you don't know what is behind the scenes.
Exactly. Behind the scenes really are very important. Things are being cooked for us without us noticing them.
Exactly. I have been in touch with people who have been in media industry, and I have known a lot of people who were saying like what we are supposed to do just to give a one click, how much emotions you should have just to have that one
to
click.
To attract the attention of people.
To attract the attention of the people. Like you have to, you know.
And you know how much money they
are spending.
Yes. How much
A lot of money. The problem is that you start seeing things apparently.
Yeah.
You don't go deep down into them. As you rightly mentioned in the beginning, that we just apparently see a thing and we start judging and deciding and getting into the fact that I need to get...
Nowadays, you see that many women go for gyms, not because they like a sport, but just because...
To show you a neighbor that I'm also going to gym.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's become a trend. This is very bad.
Unfortunately, yeah.
We're not doing things for ourselves.
We have become a showing off stock.
Yes, showing off. Human beings are supposed to be much deeper than this.
And, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Surah Taqasur, you're expecting more and more and more without your needs. You don't see these graves and still you don't, you know, see these graves. They all wanted to have more and more and more. Just see them where they are.
Exactly.
Where they are today.
We're turning into greedy people.
Greedy people,
we want everything at the very same time. So, what do you say about a little break? We go for a break and we'll be back.
Yeah, sure. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Youth Station, we're with you. Don't go anywhere. Just a minute and we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So we're back with getting deeper into humanity.
Getting deeper into the fact why we look at apparent things.
Yes,
not
don't
down.
Go for appearance.
Yeah,
it's a bad thing.
Asma has the worst experience of ordering things online and then getting, oh, what is this? Why I
disillusionment sometimes happen, you know?
Oh, yeah, it happens with me as well.
It has been inevitable. I told
well, my part has been very worse. My part has been very worse.
You have the same experience?
Oh, worse than that. I saw an advertisement on newspaper, not on digital media, a newspaper. And then they said, like, if you send us, like, just say some, I don't know, just send us some amount, say $50, and then we'll send you a pack of $100 for $50. And then we received a parcel. After some days, and within the parcel, there was again a parcel.
We're getting experience time and time.
This was interesting. When I received the parcel, inside the parcel, there was another parcel. Inside the parcel, there was another parcel. And at the last of it, at the end of the day, there was a pack of sand. And I was like, you're spending.
That's fraud. It's
Yeah. Like I have. So apparent things, you have to make a little research.
Exactly.
It's not only like you're on. Like ordering
we
something.
Have to go beyond things. The face does not matter too much, but what's inside is much more important.
Even in terms of news, you know, Asma, because there are so many techniques used in the media.
True.
Like, there are techniques. They're
brainwashing people, you know.
Exactly. Using big lies, using media techniques of starting the news from step two. Not telling the first part of the story, not telling the other part of the story. I think this is happening.
They make some attractive headlines, though the true story is not
especially
so
showing Muslims the way the Islam is not.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Yes, unfortunately, that is one of the things which has made us, I don't know, not to be introduced to the world in a way that we truly deserve.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
That's, I think, the act of, as you said, social media.
Yeah.
They invest a lot on that part.
Yeah.
You know, as using Instagram or other applications.
Any mass media is spending a lot of money, spending a lot of time to make an unauthentic thing look very authentic, to make a thing that is really fraud look like it's really the claimants of human rights.
And you know, Zainab, not every Muslim is a true model to show Islam, you know?
Yeah.
Some Muslim people are not true Muslims. So we cannot trust them.
You cannot judge Islam.
Yes, exactly.
You cannot judge Islam by looking at that.
It happens because we're living in a Muslim country. But even though that we're living in here, in a Muslim country, we experience that there are some people who are just being called Muslim.
Yeah.
But the true story of Islam could not be applied to them.
Exactly. We have two kinds of Muslims. We have Muslims by names and Muslims by practice.
Yes.
But unfortunately, the world is just judging Islam by the Muslims by names.
Yes.
The Muslims by names.
And that happens only to Muslim people, I think. Well, Christianity does not have such a thing, right?
Yeah,
they do not have
propagandas. I think this propaganda is there,
Why is that? It's so unfair.
Because they're scared of Islam. They're scared of the reality. They are scared that Islam talks about justice. Islam talks about equality.
Yes.
And if justice and equality and all things come into the place, the world leaders will have
problems.
they'll have
they
problems.
Would not achieve their
so
benefits.
They have to do propaganda. They have to show
exactly.
it bad.
They have to create agendas against
they have to create
the
agendas.
Muslim people.
These
and
human
Islam.
Right claimants of the world, mm-hmm. they claim on the mass media that we are human right claim human rights. You know, we are the defenders of human rights,
yes.
but they are creating the most human rights violations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And since the audience are mostly youth, I have to say this as a personal experience. Sometimes I saw some youngsters who were recently accepting Islam or Muslim youth who were not so much attached to the rules of Islam. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they see one person, one Muslim, a person who's been called Muslim, and they are, you know, they are demotivated. They are no longer interested to practice the rules of Islam, to abide by the rules.
I think there's a this tear, I think, Asma, is a fault of two people.
Mm-hmm.
One, a Muslim who has least knowledge. Second, a Hausa person who has expressed Islam only in a very sad and bad way.
Yes, and Zainab, we're responsible, you know. I might have an effect on my friend, and maybe the thing that I'm doing would demotivate them, and they would be saying, oh, if this is Islam, then I don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't want it.
Yes.
Yeah,
if a Muslim person lies, then I don't want to be a Muslim.
Yeah,
if a Muslim person is unfair, is judging, is doing bad thing, then I don't want to be one.
I don't want to be a Muslim. But they
yes.
Because they are judging again on the apparent
on the
basis.
Surface.
Seeing
yes.
the ambassador
one person could not
of Islam.
Show,
they do
yes,
not see what is in Islam
the ambassador.
Itself.
Yes, that's very true.
Going deep down the story, we have to always look what Islam says. Does Islam mm-hmm. really say be unjust, be a liar, be a fraud? No, Islam does not say like that. This person who came as a Muslim ambassador, mm-hmm. he failed to represent
the
Islam.
The wrong is in them, not with Islam.
Not with Islam.
Yes.
Not with Islam. So you have to analyze these ambassadors,
exactly.
the one these representators basically. Is this representator a good representator or
exactly.
not?
Exactly, very
do
true.
Do not go on the apparent basis. Mm-hmm. I think we must go deep down.
Dig deep.
Like,
yes,
like
dig deep.
In the online things, we have to see the quality. Don't see the color of this thing, you know?
And then get attracted.
You
and
get attracted and all. Just see what kind
you're going
to
be disillusioned. And trust us, people. We have had experiences.
Yeah, They write a lot of details. They mm-hmm. write this is not cotton,
which are
this.
Not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So, dear friends, girls and boys, try to dig deep into things. Don't go by the appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
The appearance is usually a cheater.
And everything that shines is not gold.
Exactly. What a nice thinking image. Not everything that shines is gold. So, thank you for listening to us. I hope you're having a perfect day and night. And until another session, I bid you farewell.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump said he would join crowd to U.S. Capitol, but his schedule indicates he deliberately lied to his supporters. We present you an article written by Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled, Trump's Private Schedule Reveals No Plans for Him to Join 6th of January March. According to Donald Trump's White House private schedule from 6th of January 2021, he was aware long before he took the stage at the Save America rally on that day that he would not march to the Capitol to protest the congressional certification of Joe Biden's election win. The former president started his nearly 75-minute long speech at the Ellipse by claiming he would go with the crowd to the Capitol and then repeated that promise when he said he would walk with them down Pennsylvania Avenue towards the Capitol building. But Donald Trump's private schedule, released by the House Select Committee investigating the Capitol attack in a filing on Wednesday, 2nd of March, shows that Donald Trump must have known that there were no plans for him to join such a march, and that he was being taken back to the White House. The newly released private schedule indicates Donald Trump deliberately lied to his supporters, raising the specter that he made a promise he had no intention of honoring, so that they would descend on the Capitol and disrupt Congress from certifying Joe Biden as president. It is a significant revelation that could bolster the House Select Committee's claim in the filing that Donald Trump engaged in a criminal conspiracy to defraud the United States by seeking to obstruct a lawful function of the government by deceitful or dishonest means. Ryan Goodman, a former special counsel at the Department of Defense, said, "Trump telling the crowd that he would join them at the Capitol was incendiary in that they thought that their field marshal would be there." Ryan Goodman added, "It is further evidence that Donald Trump knew he was inciting an already highly volatile situation." Former president's private schedule may also support a parallel civil lawsuit brought by the Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell, a former House impeachment manager, that Donald Trump prompted the Capitol attack through his comments in his speech. The lawsuit said Trump directly incited the violence at the Capitol that followed and then watched approvingly as the building was overrun, adding, "The horrific events of 6th of January 2021 were a direct and foreseeable consequence of the defendants' unlawful actions." Donald Trump's private schedule for that day indicated the former president was to travel directly from the White House to the Ellipse, speak at the Save America rally there, and then immediately return to the White House once his speech had concluded. The former president was running late on 6th of January, but the timestamp on the document reads 11:22 a.m. local time, roughly half an hour before he started to speak at the rally at 11:50 a.m. local time, meaning he must have known before he took to the stage that he was not going on to the Capitol. Donald Trump's promises are significant as they served as one of the primary motivations for his supporters to march to the Capitol alongside militia groups like the Oath Keepers, and were used by far-right activists like Alex Jones to encourage the crowd along the route. Indeed, testimony in federal prosecutions of rioters charged in connection to the Capitol attack suggests that Donald Trump's promises that he would walk with them to the Capitol was the proximate cause for them to also walk up to Congress before the march descended into a riot. An analysis of cell phone data published by the New York Times also reveals that many of Donald Trump's supporters who marched from the rally to the Capitol went down Pennsylvania Avenue, just as he has suggested, a more circuitous route than walking up the National Mile. According to a source familiar with the matter, crucially, Donald Trump made the false promises that led the crowd to go to the Capitol in spite of being told by the Secret Service days before the situation was too volatile for them to guarantee his security if he joined them. That raises the prospect that the former president encouraged his supporters to march to the Capitol on a promise he knew to be false, in the hope that the security situation he had been told was volatile would lead to some event that would stop Joe Biden's certification. But regardless of what he agreed with the Secret Service, his private schedule from just before the speech indicates that Donald Trump deliberately and repeatedly lied to the crowd about his intentions in a way that could leave him vulnerable to civil charges or even criminal charges. The former president's private schedule came as part of court filings submitted by the Select Committee seeking to challenge former Trump lawyer John Eastman's claim that thousands of emails demanded by the panel are protected by attorney-client privilege. The House Select Committee said in its filing that it believed the privilege asserted over the records were not applicable because of the so-called crime fraud exception, arguing Eastman was involved in potentially illegal efforts by Donald Trump to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Furthermore, the House Select Committee investigating the 6th of January Capitol attack has subpoenaed Kimberly Guilfoyle, the fiancée of Donald Trump's eldest son. House investigators issued the subpoena on Thursday, 3rd of March, after she had abruptly ended a voluntary interview with a panel recently. The chairman of the House Select Committee, Benny Thompson, said in the subpoena letter to Kimberly Guilfoyle that the panel was compelling her testimony because of her proximity to the former president, and the rally that preceded the Capitol attack on 6th of January 2021. Benny Thompson said the panel had been left with no choice but to force her cooperation. Benny Thompson said, "Because Ms. Guilfoyle backed out of her original commitment to provide a voluntary interview, we are issuing today's subpoena that will compel her to testify. We expect her to comply with the law and cooperate." Kimberly Guilfoyle met virtually with the panel for an interview recently, but cut off questioning when she learned that the Select Committee members Adam Schiff and Jamie Raskin, in addition to counsel, had joined the call. According to a source familiar with the interview, after news of her appearance was leaked to news outlets, Guilfoyle refused to continue, and her lawyer accused the Select Committee of trying to sandbag her and not keeping participants limited to committee counsel. Members of the House Select Committee are actively involved in the investigation and are almost always present at depositions. But Kimberly Guilfoyle's lawyer said in a statement that the panel sought to use her cooperation as a political weapon against Donald Trump. Joseph Tacopina, Kimberly Guilfoyle's lawyer, said in a statement that after she halted her interview, Ms. Guilfoyle, under threat of subpoena, agreed to meet exclusively with counsel for the Select Committee in a good-faith effort to provide true and relevant evidence. Referring to the two congressmen, Adam Schiff and Jamie Raskin, Joseph Tacopina said, "However, upon Ms. Guilfoyle's attendance, the committee revealed its untrustworthiness, as members notorious for leaking information appeared." The lawyer for Kimberly Guilfoyle added that after he asked for a break to address the issue with House investigators, the Select Committee leaked a breakdown in proceedings to reporters. A spokesman for the Select Committee has denied Joseph Tacopina's claim. The House Select Committee did not address those complaints on Thursday, 3rd of March, but the subpoena authorization suggested the panel does not believe the matter precludes her from testifying about her contacts with Donald Trump and rally organizers on 6th of January. The panel additionally noted that it had earlier informed her legal team that members would be present in her interview and even offered to reschedule Kimberly Guilfoyle's interview, but she declined. The subpoena said Guilfoyle was notably present for an Oval Office meeting that morning when Donald Trump pressed the then-Vice President Mike Pence to reject slates of electors for Joe Biden at the joint session of Congress and thus return him to power. House investigators added in the subpoena that they were also interested in Kimberly Guilfoyle's claim that she helped fund the Save America rally that preceded the Capitol attack, as well as discussions with Donald Trump about who spoke at the rally. The panel said Guilfoyle told at least one rally organizer that she had raised so much money for this, literally one of my donors, Julie, at $3 million, a reference to Julie Fancelli, who did in fact finance the event. Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the importance of having halal sustenance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the importance of using the halal sustenance. It is very important in the Islamic lifestyle that the things that we eat must be halal, must be allowable according to the Islam, because Islam is the religion that takes us towards the perfection. Islam is the set of rules, and it is a system of life which guides us to have the best life in this world and in hereafter. Therefore, if we follow Islam according to its teachings, we will definitely be from those who are the perfect ones. We can become the saints, we can become the awliyaullah, inshaAllah. So it depends that whether we are following the Islamic teachings or not. In the Islamic lifestyle, it is important to have the halal sustenance for ourselves and for our kids and family, because it is clearly said in the Quran that ya ayyuhan nas kulu mimma fil ardi halalan tayyiba, O the mankind, eat from what in the earth is halal and pure, inshaAllah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the importance of using the halal sustenance in Islam. According to the Islamic teachings and in having the Islamic lifestyle, it is very important that what we eat must be something halal. In the Quran, Allah has said that Ya ayyuhan nas kulu mimma fil ardi halalan tayyiba. Allah has said, O the mankind, eat from what is in the earth pure and halal. Now, in this verse, we can clearly see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who is the creator of all, is talking to the mankind. He is not talking to the mu'mineen, the believers only. He is not talking to the Muslims only. He is not talking to the people of the book, Ahlul Kitab, for example, the Christians, Jews, the Muslims. He is talking to the mankind. So this message is for the whole mankind that, oh, the mankind, if you want to have a healthy life, if you want to have a life in which your soul can become pure, if you want to have a good life, if you want to have a peaceful life, therefore it is necessary to eat from the halal and tayyib food. Halal means something which is allowable, and the tayyib means pure. Now, what is the difference of halal? Obviously, every halal cannot be tayyib. There is a discussion, and it is said that if you want to make something which is halal, we want to change it to tayyib, say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim before cooking. So our sisters or brothers who cook food, they should read Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. They should start cooking or cutting the vegetables with the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it changes this halal sustenance or halal food into tayyib. And that's why it is said that you should say Bismillah first in the name of God, in the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and then try to eat or drink. So it is important to have a halal and tayyib food whenever you want to eat anything. And this is commonly this has been said for everyone on this earth, no matter if he is a Hindu, a Muslim, an atheist, a Jew, a Christian, no matter who he is. If he comes under the topic of Ya ayyuhan nas, or the mankind, then it is necessary to have the halal and tayyib food, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
in the limelight.
In the United States, a television news anchor in Pensacola, Florida, challenged Representative Matt Gaetz on Friday, 4th of March, over his claims that former President Donald Trump won the 2020 presidential election. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek magazine journalist Andrew Stanton. The piece is titled, Matt Gaetz Challenged by TV Anchor After Saying Trump Won 2020 Election. Stay with us for more of Andrew Stanton's article. In the U.S., a television news anchor in Pensacola, Florida, challenged Representative Matt Gaetz on Friday, 4th of March, over his claims that former President Donald Trump won the 2020 presidential election. Representative Matt Gaetz, a Florida Republican, has been among the GOP figures who promoted the unproven claims that President Joe Biden only won in 2020 due to widespread voter fraud. I believe that Donald Trump won the 2020 election, he said on local news station WEAR-TV, after anchor Bob Sulawski asked if he still buys into the theory of a stolen election. Bob Sulawski responded, "You can't say that without saying that there was a gigantic conspiracy across this country and supervisor of election officers everywhere to make this happen. And we haven't still seen any evidence that proves that." The confrontation came during a discussion about former Attorney General William Barr's remarks dismissing efforts that were made to change the election results. The objection process has become almost commonplace. It certainly has with Republicans when they get elected, the representative said, who has long voiced skepticism that Joe Biden rightfully won the election. On the presidential level, there have only been three instances of Electoral College objections. In 1969, in 2005, and in 2021, all were rejected by Congress. In October of last year, Representative Jamie Raskin, a Maryland Democrat, pressed Matt Gaetz on whether or not he accepts the results of the 2020 presidential election. "I think that our election was uniquely polluted by these indiscriminate mail-in ballots," Matt Gaetz responded at the time. He added, "I think this was the first time in America's history where the mailbox beat the ballot box." Some Republicans sought to overturn the 2020 presidential election results by citing widespread voter fraud, even though no significant evidence has been provided to back up those claims. On 6th of January 2021, congressional Republicans challenged the Electoral College certification while Capitol rioters engaged in a violent protest to pressure Congress to overturn the election results. In the months following the election, Republicans in several states, including Arizona and Wisconsin, pushed for audits of the election, but every audit upheld the results. Representative Matt Gaetz, meanwhile, has continued to ally himself with Donald Trump, saying that they have discussed the possibility of the former president becoming the next Speaker of the House of Representatives if Republicans retake a majority in Congress. "I told him, you don't even have to be speaker for the whole day," he said, while appearing on Sebastian Gorka's American First. "You could do it for like 3 or 4 hours, give us a great speech, make a few structural reforms to the institution, and then you could resign, and we could have another election for speaker." Newsweek has reached out to Matt Gaetz's office for comment on Saturday morning, but has received no response. Meanwhile, Representative Matt Gaetz has said he believes one of the goals of the January 6th House Select Committee is to block former President Donald Trump from running for president in 2024 by disqualifying him as a candidate. Representative Madison Cawthorn's candidacy for re-election is being challenged in North Carolina because of his alleged stoking of violence on 6th of January and allegedly aiding Capitol rioters. Madison Cawthorn's challengers are invoking the disqualification clause of the Constitution, and Matt Gaetz believes the same tactic will be used against former President Donald Trump. Disqualifying potential candidates is the newest and most dangerous iteration of cancel culture, Matt Gaetz said on Thursday. I believe the January 6th committee is going to try to do it regarding Donald Trump. The 14th Amendment, also known as a disqualification clause, was ratified after the Civil War with the intention of preventing officials who supported insurrection from holding office in the future. North Carolina voters who are challenging Madison Cawthorn's candidacy cite comments he made in a speech shortly before the 6th of January Capitol riot and said the violence on that day amounted to an insurrection. Claiming to be fighting a battle for our Constitution, Madison Cawthorn has engaged in blatant acts of insurrection, John Wallace, a lawyer who filed the lawsuit, argued. John Wallace added he must be held accountable for his actions which have threatened our democracy. Wisely, the Constitution provides a remedy for our protection. Madison Cawthorn filed a federal lawsuit over the challenge of his re-election campaign, calling it unconstitutional. In a statement, he said he has never and would never engage in an insurrection against the United States and called the challenge to his candidacy a weapon by liberal Democrats intended to defeat our democracy.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoint on Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, I rose up to reform the Muslim community of my grandfather Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. He also said, Whoever observes a ruler legalize what God has made unlawful, violating the covenant of Allah, opposing the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, and treating the creatures of God sinfully and oppressively, he does not oppose him with his speech and action. God has a right to bring him to the same fate as that of the tyrant. That is, if a person sees where corruption and oppression emerge from, yet they do not do anything to oppose the source of corruption and oppression. For God the Exalted, they have the same fate as the corrupt oppressor. He said that he did not rise up for the cause of wickedness, amusement, corruption, or oppression. The people of Iraq invited Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam to rule over them. And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam answered their request. So it is not that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam did not think of creating a movement. He was indeed thinking of overturning a tyrannic powers, either by taking the government away from them or by martyrdom.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam knew what would his silence, his endorsement, and his indifference would do to Islam if he did not take any action. When a power takes all the capacities of a community or some communities under control and acts tyrannically, if the men of truth do not oppose him, refuting his actions, they have actually endorsed his actions. That is, oppression is endorsed by the men of truth, without them really wanting it. This is what a sin committed by the elite from among the Bani Hashim and the children of the prominent figures of the early years of Islam. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, however, would not tolerate it. He hence has rose up.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Waiting until the final moment to register in order to skirt laws on equal media time for election candidates, French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed he will run for re-election. The slate of candidates is now finalized. Macron began his term hailed as the new leader of the free world, but his once-in-a-century repression of the Yellow Vests has many calling him a liberal strongman who enforces rubber bullet liberalism. Macron is leading in the first round and has a comfortable lead in the second round of roughly 60-40 over far-right mainstay Marine Le Pen. The Russian special military operation in Ukraine has given Macron a 5-point increase in the past 2 weeks, and the ending of extremely strict coronavirus rules in mid-March may lead to another increase. However, Western polling agencies have become severely discredited in recent years, with France's largest newspaper refusing to run any of them.
I don't believe the polls, which are all conducted by private companies who deliver the results, which they are paid to deliver. Macron's track record is catastrophic. He's achieved nothing for the average person. It's truly the dictatorship of a total capitalist. France has really reached the bottom.
The campaign hasn't been centered around the incumbent's record, but openly Islamophobic ideas. Despite running third or fourth in the polls, far-right convicted racist Eric Zemmour has been allowed by media executives to set the agenda.
The rise of the extreme right is totally unsupportable, and we have no choice but to confront these ideas of fascism, racism, and xenophobia. France must stand up as one and say no. I'm sure that France will, and I'm sure no far-right candidates will reach the second round.
The resulting lack of serious issues appears certain to produce record abstention. Just 52% of France is interested in the vote this year, compared to 78% for the previous election.
3 weeks ago, all of the leading candidates were openly pro-Russian, but France's media has been swept by a wave of war hysteria, which usually benefits the incumbent. However, for many, at least that has pushed Islamophobia off the agenda, at least for now. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
On Saturday, over 30,000 people staged a rally in the Italian capital against the escalating war between Russia and Ukraine. The initiative was called by trade unions, leftist groups and pro-peace movements as fighting rages on in a number of Ukrainian cities and talks between Kyiv and Moscow have produced very little so far. The protesters chanted slogans for peace and the end of all wars, urging the United Nations to do more to mediate between Russia, Ukraine and all parties related to the ongoing Ukrainian crisis.
Rather than investing in social welfare, labor, health and education systems, in Western countries have been wasting resources on armaments. Today, Russia must be held accountable for the Ukraine crisis.
Anti-war rallies have been held across Italy over the past days. Most of the demonstrations held in Rome, Palermo, Milan and other Italian cities have been in solidarity with Ukraine.
People at the rally have mixed feelings over who should be held accountable for the war in Ukraine. The majority believe there is a shared responsibility upon all the parts involved, from the US and the NATO, to Russia's President Vladimir Putin.
In Italy, the most recent government update places the number of Ukrainian refugees who have entered the country since the start of the war at about 9,000. According to Ukrainian-Italian associations, up to 800,000-900,000 refugees may reach Italy in the coming weeks. Max Civili, Rome.
Head of the UN atomic watchdog, Rafael Grossi, was once again in Tehran in less than 3 months to resolve what he called important obstacles in the way of concluding the Vienna talks, which are ongoing between Iran and the P4+1, with the aim of reviving the 2015 deal. In a joint presser, Grossi and head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, said they agree on a roadmap to resolve all the IAEA questions about Iran's nuclear program by late June.
It's a real pleasure to be back in Iran, in Tehran, and with President Islami, with whom we had a very fruitful and intense exchange this morning.
We have agreed to provide the IAEA by June 21st with documents related to outstanding questions between Tehran and the agency.
The IAEA has been seeking answers from Iran on traces of uranium it has allegedly found in old Iranian nuclear facilities. Falling in the category of the safeguards issues, this topic seems to be a major sticking point, blocking an agreement in the ongoing Vienna talks. And as Grossi described, it's intertwined with the fate of the discussions in Vienna.
They are very closely interrelated, and it would be difficult to believe or to imagine that such an important return to such a comprehensive agreement like Barjam would be possible if the agency and Iran would not be seeing eye to eye on how to resolve these important safeguards issues.
Iran has vehemently dismissed the IAEA's safeguards narrative as a political claim, calling on the nuclear watchdog to stick to its technical task and avoid being influenced by, quote, political lobbying.
I urge Mr. Grossi that political influence and lobbying should not impact the decisions of the IAEA. Iran and the IAEA should follow their issues in a completely professional way and behave within the framework of expertise.
Grossi's visit to Tehran is seen as a major push to sort out the last differences in the Austrian capital, which has hosted numerous rounds of talks to remedy the crippled 2015 deal. In 2018, then-U.S. President Donald Trump pulled Washington out of the accord and reinstated sanctions against Iran. Tehran, in return, scaled back its compliance with part of the agreement. Both Grossi and the Iranian atomic chief agreed that their meeting was fruitful. This could mean that another roadblock has been removed, and negotiators in Vienna will only have to cross the T's before a final conclusion is reached. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
EU foreign affairs ministers held yet another emergency meeting on Friday evening in Brussels to take stock of many Ukraine-related issues. The flow of refugees into EU nations was discussed at length. The impact of recently announced Western sanctions on Russia was assessed.
We are not under regime change. The sanctions are not in order to provoke a regime change in Russia.
Borrell says the sanctions are in fact designed to end the deadly conflict. NATO foreign ministers also met on Friday and reaffirmed their stance of not being drawn into the war. They acknowledged the results could be catastrophic. However, NATO allies continue to send thousands of additional troops into eastern parts of the 30-nation alliance.
And we have over 130 jets at high alert and over 200 ships from the high north to the Mediterranean.
Experts say the US is controlling all of the West's next moves, and the decision to supply deadly arms to Ukraine was a mistake.
The Europeans are saying to the Ukrainian, we're not going to send men to fight with you, we're not going to fight by your side, we give you weapons for you to fight. And had that not happened, President Zelensky would have talked to Russia from day one and avoided this war.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken attended all of the key events in Brussels on Friday, focusing on Ukraine.
Unfortunately, tragically, horrifically, this may not be over soon. And so these efforts that we're making together, we have to sustain them.
A number of political commentators are saying this crisis could have been averted if Russia's legitimate security concerns had been listened to. Therefore, they suggest the onus is now on Western leaders to bring about de-escalation as a matter of urgency. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Western media coverage of the conflict in Ukraine has come under the spotlight over what's seen as racist comments by journalists and their guests talking about the crisis affecting the Ukrainian people.
Me, I'm sorry. It's really emotional for me because I see European people with blue eyes and blonde hair being killed, children being killed every day with Putin's missiles and his helicopters and his rockets.
And so, of course, I understand and respect the emotion.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to choose those words carefully too, city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
We're not talking here about Syrians fleeing the bombing of the Syrian regime backed by Putin. We're talking about Europeans living in cars that look like ours to save their lives.
People across the world were quick to react to those comments.
I support